Support for Culture Q comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Hello and welcome to Culture Q, the art show that rocks. I'm your host, Ryan Wilson. The weather has been beautiful in the Twin Cities this past week, and slowly but surely we're all crawling out of our winter hibernation and enjoying the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And what a week to do it. There's been a lot of great arts and culture events happening, and we've got reports on them. Brush up on your onomatopoeias as we attend a poetry slam, grease your skillet for some tips on cooking fish, and lay down some fat beats for a hip-hop conference. Tickets are free, and there's no wait, as we explore what's going down in the Twin Cities this week on Culture Q. Poetry's all right, I guess. Sitting in the park on a warm day reading T.S. Eliot is nice, but not terribly exciting. But poetry can rock. Poets at the University of Minnesota add a little flair, a little attitude to their poems, a little showmanship. The performance is called Slam Poetry. Here's Christetta Borini.
We like a really weird thing where we tell personal stories to large crowds of strangers, but I think that you get rewarded for it, not just in points, but in, like, people who will come up to you afterwards and say, like, that was really important to me, and they had nothing to do with the poem.
Miles Walzer engages in slam poetry. Now, before your mind conjures up images of beatniks and seedy cafes or Eminem rapping improvised insults in that 8 Mile movie, imagine a student.
We met in the library. She sat down across from me, dropped a stack of books between us like a paper exclamation point and said, I don't feel much like studying.
Or a girlfriend.
There's a bun in my oven, and I know it's not the first time I've seen my reflection in Dr. Internet's webpage of illnesses.
Or a Midwesterner.
Round bellies and bacon. Lots of bacon. And then he did it, surrounded by old people and short stacks and Perkins.
And you'll find that slam is not even about images at all, but about stories and the vibrant poets who tell them. So why do slam poetry? I asked Miles and the rest of the University of Minnesota's Poetry Slam team what this kind of self-expression is all about. Poets Sam Cook and Zena Goldman explain.
I guess I really believe that it's important to be open about your life, and that part of the work we're doing is giving people a place to see they can be open about their own lives and a place to express the things you might not say somewhere else. I mean, like, I feel like all the arts are for saying something you can't say day to day, you know?
Because we know how to express ourselves, it's not just about us. It's like our responsibility to say the things that other people can't, and acting as a kind of catharsis for other people as well as ourselves.
But for the U of M team, slam has an additional purpose, competition. Sam Cook, Rob Weekend, and Miles Walzer describe the rules.
The judging is like Olympic diving, you know, 0 to 10. You drop the low and the high score, and you take the 3 in the middle to get your final score. It's like rounds, just 3 rounds of competition. Best poets survive, or the best scoring poets get to go on and compete longer.
The poet has 3 minutes and 10 seconds to perform a poem that he or she created. No props or musical accompaniment.
Judges are 5 randomly selected audience members, so they're not necessarily trained in the judging of poetry.
From April 7th through the 10th, the team will be in Boston to compete against Poetry Slam teams from across the country. But to get there, Rob Weekend says that it's been a bumpy ride.
That being said, I think that when we get to Boston, we will declare ourselves the grimiest fundraisers there are. Like, we're selling root beer floats right now so that we can go perform poems 1,388 miles away. Yeah. Just saying. Like, the university hasn't handed us any money this year. We've just made up events out of very random connections we have, and we put a lot of work. Each of us individually has set up our own things, put in hours just doing this.
Team member Michael Lee says that despite the university's lack of funding, the community has really stepped up to the plate to help this team get to Boston.
We've had a lot of people come out. I mean, the slam community in Minneapolis and St. Paul is a lot bigger than I think a lot of people realize. And we've had a lot of new people come out and really enjoy it. We've seen a lot of people that just keep coming back. And it's been really good. We've had some good support, but we can always use more. We can always use a lot more when we're trying to make this thing grow.
In 2009, the U of M team won fifth place in competition. This year, they've set their sights on a national title. But artists that they are, they still haven't lost sight of the beauty that is poetry.
It's like I'm not really there exactly. It's like the poem is flowing through me, and I'm just like, I become a vessel for it for a few seconds. And it reminds me of like what people talk about religious ecstasy and stuff like that, like not being yourself for a moment and being consumed by something else, like the crowd and the words and the emotion. And it's a unique feeling, you know? And it ain't no use in
calling out my name, yeah. For Culture Q, I'm Christetta Borini.
This is Culture Q. I'm Ryan Wilson. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. All the crappy movies come out in spring. Oscar contenders come out in late fall, big budget action films come out in summer, and all you really get in spring is some sappy romances, lame comedies, and studio projects that will probably lose money. But there is hope for true film lovers in spring. Independent films. And there's a lot of good ones playing in the Twin Cities. Here's Megan Manning.
The Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival may not be Sundance, but in featuring over 140 films, it is certainly an annual highlight within the Twin Cities arts community and beyond. The festival offers moviegoers an opportunity to take in both international films and some made right here in Minnesota. Though the prospect of navigating the two-week-long marathon of cinematic excellence may seem like a daunting task, Jacqueline O'Grady and Ryan Ostrike from Minnesota Film Arts are about to help me break it down for you.
You got to know your schedule, and then you got to look at the film schedule and say to yourself, well, if I see this film, and then I can see any film that starts after this time, and then you can work in a couple of really great films. And you can see a double feature that starts off in Thailand and ends in South Africa. So, I mean, you're really traveling around the world with these films. It's pretty great.
Ostrike also recommends asking your fellow moviegoers for advice on which films to take in.
And then once you see one film, when you're in the audience and when you're talking to people, you're going to say, hey, I saw this film, I liked it, do you have any more to recommend? And let me tell you, people love talking about the movies they see.
The festival begins on April 15th and runs through April 30th, with most movies showing at the St. Anthony Main Theater. This year's event will have a new late-night session featuring films that don't quite fit into the more genre-based organization of the primetime lineup. The festival also has a childish bill that is aimed at young audiences and is slotted on weekend afternoons. Ryan Ostrike says, however, these films really are for everyone.
You got kids in there from, 4 to 12 years old with their parents, and they're seeing really cool movies from like animations from Ireland and animations from like Russia and Norway and China. These are really interesting films that aren't just for kids. I want to stress that. They're not just for kids. But we do it for kids, and we call it the childish films.
The Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival doesn't forget the community that supports it either. The Minnesota Made category features 8 cinematic efforts by locals. One Minnesota Made follows a single dad, Terry Hitchcock, as he makes the 2,000-mile journey from St. Paul to Atlanta on foot.
I said I want to do a marathon a day. But I want to run on the highway, run by myself and team to the opening ceremonies of the Olympics in Atlanta.
You look at this guy, you do not think this is a marathon runner.
Well, he's 56 years old, he's on high blood pressure medication. I don't think he's really ever run before.
What did I get myself into?
This year's opener, Cyrus, stars John C. Reilly, Marissa Tomei, and Catherine Keener, and doesn't begin its main theater run until July. Also showing are Night Catches Us, a film tracing members of the Black Panthers through their post-Panther existence in the mid-1970s. Word number six, this year's Russian Oscar submission, Cao, a Chinese drama about a man whose one task during World War II is to stay home and guard the city's sacred cow, and Bananas, which chronicles the struggle of Latin American banana plantation workers against large American companies that knowingly apply harmful pesticides to their crops. Here's a clip.
Did you ever notice an unusual odor?
Yes, of course.
Did anyone ever tell you that if you could smell that chemical, you were breathing too much of it, that it could hurt you?
No.
This is bigger than just a case. This is the very first time ever that agricultural workers from a third world nation are heard in a United States court.
Jacqueline O'Grady, former University of Minnesota student and this year's Ticketing, Hospitality, and Transportation Coordinator, also nabbed an up-and-coming Australian screenwriter.
Some pretty cool people coming in. Right away, opening weekend, we have a whole bunch of people. I'm pretty excited about Joel Edgerton is coming with the film The Square, which was directed by his brother, and Joel wrote it. So he's coming to present that. I work at Sundance, and he was there for that. The film that he was in won the jury award, so he accepted that. So he's kind of getting a big name.
According to O-Strike, the crowds are as mixed as the films themselves.
Oh, the crowds, they are mixed. You've got, of course, your core audience of people who basically they're either like first generation or second generation. People can still speak different languages and they want to come see movies from their home or want to reconnect. And then you've got your film buffs and your general international film audience who love film and know you're never going to see these on the big screen and understand the difference between watching a film on your laptop and watching a film on the big screen with a packed audience of people who love foreign movies. I have people run up to me and they go, I'm at 48. And I'm like, 48 what? 48 films. And I'm amazed. I don't know how people can watch 48 films in 2 weeks, but they do and they love it. So it's a great interactive event.
For more information, see mnfilmarts.org. For Culture Q, I'm Megan Manning.
Hey, welcome back to Culture Q. This is Ryan Wilson, and I'm joined by Chris Marshall to give us this week's top seven. Chris, what do we got for this week?
Well, Ryan, this week the top seven will be the top seven things to do instead of rioting at Spring Jam.
Yes, that's right. Last year there was a massive riot, an alcohol-fueled frenzy, and this year we're giving you some things you can do instead of that. Try and make this campus a more peaceful place. So, Chris, what's the number seven?
Number seven. Toss a frisbee with your bros.
Oh, he's a great option. Number six.
Number six is conduct a peaceful demonstration in opposition to underage drinking.
Yes, be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Number five.
Number five is beer pong.
Always a great activity. Number four.
Number four, explore the university's minor catalog. There are all sorts of minors you can tack on to your degree before you get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Great, great thing to do. Why not become a more educated person instead of causing senseless violence? Mm-hmm. Number three.
Number three, update your Facebook status to not rioting. You can also tweet that.
Yes, that's a great option. How else can all your friends know that you are not rioting? Number two.
Number two, go online, check out the Culture Q archives. We've archived every one of our shows.
Yes, that's right. RadioK.org. Click the programming tab, and there you have it. Every episode of Culture Q, hours and hours of endless fun. You know, bring your friends over, too. You don't have to do it by yourself. Have a Culture Q party.
A Culture Q party. Actually, I had a Culture Q party last weekend. The whole neighborhood came over. We had a potluck. It's great.
Excellent. And much more fun than rioting. Mm-hmm. And here is Chris Marshall's number one thing to do instead of rioting at Spring Jam.
Go to bed early.
There you have it. That is the top seven things to do instead of rioting at this Spring Jam. Thanks, Chris.
Oh, thank you, Ryan.
Up next, we'll hear a little more from Chris Marshall. He's looking at how to cook the perfect fish. Unfortunately, the fishing season doesn't start until May in Minnesota, so you might want to write some of these tips down.
Nothing says Minnesota cuisine like the sizzle of fresh lake-caught fish in a cast-iron pan, maybe served on a bed of wild rice. But how does this scaly, bug-eyed critter get from lake to plate? It's a daunting process that many home chefs would rather not deal with. The first step is picking a fish. Minnesota chef Dan Ritter says you need the head still attached to judge freshness.
When looking at a fish, if you're talking about quality, you want to see very, very red gills, highly oxygenated, very fresh. You want the eyes to be relatively clear. Cloudy eyes are not great. Although this fish is very fresh and in good shape, I would still be very careful about squeezing it very hard, so you want to support it. It's okay to slap it around a little bit.
Next, the processing begins. Ritter slaps the fish onto the counter in his commercial kitchen in Powderhorn Park, a whole arsenal of fish processing implements at his side. First, he removes the scales.
This is a Japanese fish scaler. If I was scaling it, I could just rake this real hard and it will remove the scales. At some point, start getting redundant with that. This is a more traditional fish scaler.
After the fish is descaled, Ritter selects his favorite knife from a block.
You want to make, right behind the gill plate here, you make an incision. You want to actually get down to bone, and you can see there's a chine bone right there. So, and you can use a variety of knives. This is about as short a knife as I would recommend. What you do is you make a slit from here, right at the gill plate, all the way down to the anal fin. We'll go down to the bone, and I want to hear clicks. And then, and everything else will come right out. This is kind of the connection. Pull it out, throw it away. Give it a good rinse of water.
A lot of the fish preparation techniques depend on the sort of fish being cooked and the chef's culinary style. This is an orange flesh rainbow trout Ritter is dealing with, in a Minnesota style. So he's going to leave the skin on and the head out.
I would not suggest removing the skin, and when we cook it, we won't, because the skin is beautiful, and it's crispy, it's very light, some ways it's the best part of the fish, if you ask me. If it was a good quality white fish, I'd be using the head for some kind of a stock. I'd take the eyes out. I'd make sure that anything that's fatty was gone, because I don't want a bunch of fat and collagen clouding everything up. Make sure it was as cleaned up as I could, and I would use it as a stock. The French will use the heads and the bodies as the base for bouillabaisse, and they actually grind up the entire thing. They'll put it all in a giant pot, use a very large burr mixer, which we call a bazooka, and just grind it all up and strain it. It's really unattractive, but in the end, it works out very nicely. So.
Next is where Ritter gets creative. He pulls out an unmarked container of seasoning, what he calls his proprietary rub. It looks green with herbs and has a pleasant, earthy aroma.
I like to season my fish ahead of time, and I like to do that because the salt does a little bit of a number on the exterior, develops a pellicle. And it's something that they do in smoking. It kind of gives a porous texture. They say it helps the smoke kind of attach to the fish. For me, it does more in terms of developing a crust. So I'll use kosher salt, and I will season it liberally. And I'm going to do all these at some point. So.
Now the fillets are ready for some cooking. Ritter has a cast iron pan already hot with pork fat and olive oil.
This you want to start towards you and go away. That way if there's any splash, you're not splashing it back on yourself. Quite brown. That's where all the fat is on the back side. So unless you have the skin on, you don't want to do the skin side first, because you're going to taste a lot more fat in your fish. So you would definitely want to do that as a last. So you can see it's standing up pretty nicely. It's actually fairly medium rare.
There's only one step left now, and that's to enjoy. The fish fillets are brown on the outside and pink in the middle. Perfect. And maybe even worth all the work, the cutting, the broken bones, a true Minnesota experience. For Culture Q, I'm Chris Marshall. Some you couldn't tell apart that you keep under the bed at the apartment. Then you did what he asked you to do. You opened your heart up right there on a napkin on the carpet. And part of it was frostbit. But you've always been a smart kid. Could still distinguish the blood black as pitch. Valves have gone stiff. Veins and scar tissue. Four chambers just a standard issue. But none. The perfect roommate is like the perfect woman. Neither exist. A best friend can become your least favorite person if you live with them long enough.
This week's question of the week is, what's the weirdest thing your roommate's ever done?
Okay, well, she makes a huge mess everywhere. Like, her lacy underwear is all over my room, and I can't see my floor, and she's never vacuumed. She sleeps at her boyfriend's every night, and she comes over, and God, what if she hears this? That would suck, but...
All right, so this is Alicia Murphy. I had a roommate who spilled coffee all over the kitchen floor, and she left it there for days until I would clean it up, because she knew I would clean it up. She just waited for me to clean it up, so.
I used to have this roommate that would stock up on food like she thought it was Y2K. Like, she had probably about 20 bags of noodles in her closet, her clothes closet in the hallway, and then, like, an obscene amount of frozen food in our freezer, and I thought that was pretty crazy.
Hello, my name is Dennis. Okay, freshman year, sophomore year, I had the same roommate, and the weirdest thing he's ever done is I caught him eating cereal, pizza. You know, most times he eats while he's sitting on the toilet and using the bathroom.
This is Culture Q. I'm Ryan Wilson. Music has brought people together for countless years. Now it's one of the newest genres turn. At the University of Minnesota, students are using hip-hop to unite and educate.
Is a holiday, so stop the violence and put the fofo away. Get you to hold a day. 504, 97.
When you think of representations of women in hip hop, do you think of songs like the last one by Ludacris, or do you think of uplifting lyrics like Tupac's and Keep Your Head Up? The Vices to Verses conference wants to show you that contrary to mainstream rap songs, hip-hop can empower women, build stronger communities, and create a brighter future.
The goal of the event is to showcase the power that hip-hop has, the power that hip-hop has to really improve the world that we live in.
Myra Persh is the president of the Voices Merging organization at the University of Minnesota, which is hosting the Vices to Verses conference. She created the event to give the hip-hop community tools to improve their community. Who is the hip-hop community? Well, that's a little harder to define.
And hip-hop is actually, I would say hip-hop includes all races and all socioeconomic, like, people. I think it's people from all different communities. Hip-hop is a place that anybody who wants to be a part of a hip-hop community can be a part of the hip-hop community. Hip-hop, okay, then this is a better definition. Hip-hop consists of, a lot of people will define it with the elements. So they'll define it as, like, people who are hip-hop practitioners that really partake in hip-hop culture, either being, like, a DJ, an MC, or a rapper, a breakdancer, a dancer, or a graffiti or aerosol artist. So a lot of different components. And then a lot of people say the fifth element will be knowledge or the cipher about community.
The goal of Vices to Verses is to... Well, why don't I let some of its organizers tell you themselves?
From Vices to Verses, my life is immersed in struggle. Institutional to person,
the hustle.
Don't stop, flow dropping and calling out everyone to be about what we always talk about.
And kids are getting out of school to come for a day. Go ahead and ask one of your teachers if they'll cut you a break so that you can attend. You should bring one of your friends and come split bread with us and get to ushering change.
Each one teach as many as possible. Crop from the soul and outgrow obstacles. Top to the bottom and bottom to the pinnacle. Uplift substance, every sentence, every syllable.
From Vices to Verses, a three-day conference at the University of Minnesota highlighting the transformative power of hip-hop.
Vices to Verses started Friday and runs until tomorrow. Most of the speakers and workshops will be at the Wiseman Art Museum.
hip-hop is a huge part of our lives. For a lot of Voices Merging members, a lot of students at the university, a lot of people in the Twin Cities community, and really we wanted to bring hip-hop to a place to the academic community in a lot of ways that we as college students who like engage in a lot of scholarship and a lot of academic higher level thinking wanted to really bring what we do, you know, outside of school and bring it to school.
Is hip-hop the best way to strengthen communities? If your only experience with the genre was through rap hits on the radio or music videos on cable, you probably wouldn't think so. But Moira said there's more to the genre than that.
I definitely think there's a lot of like misrepresentations when it comes to hip-hop. A lot of times people will look at rap and think that that is hip-hop and that everything everybody is saying in rap music is all of hip-hop. But what they kind of miss is, as I said, I think they kind of miss that rap is really, and what is on mainstream and what is on TV is really only a sliver of what hip-hop culture is. That hip-hop culture can be many different things, including activism and kind of what we're doing with this.
So why do you think those images are the type of hip-hop music that becomes very popular? Why is that the predominant image then of hip-hop?
Money. I think the real reason that a lot of rap is on all the videos you see and everything like that is because that is what makes money. That's what a lot of people have seen, that is what makes the most money, that sex sells, that violence, that a lot of different things that they do in the videos is what makes the most money, and that's what they continue to do because they know that maybe talking about peace or justice or healing communities isn't going to sell a bunch of records.
So maybe next time you think about hip-hop, the first thing that comes to mind won't be the violent rap songs of Ice Cube and Dr. Dre. Maybe after Vices to Verses, you'll see hip-hop is challenging social problems in our community, like education. And if that wasn't enough, then they expel y'all. Your people's understanding, but to them, you a failure. Observation and participation, my favorite teachers. When they beat us in the head with them books, it don't reach us. Whether you break dance or rock, suede, Adidas, or be in the bathroom with your clique, smoking reefer, then you know they mad flash. Ain't important unless you add enough cash and multiples. Unemployment ain't rewarding. That was Dead Prez, by the way, who will be at the Vices to Verses concert tonight at the Caboose. For Culture Q, I'm Ryan Wilson. That brings us to the end of Culture Q. Today you heard stories from Christina Borini, Megan Manning, Chris Marshall, and me, Ryan Wilson. Check us out at RadioK.org, and we're on Twitter too now, so follow us at twitter.com/CultureQ and tweet at your boy. And as always, tune in for more reasons why the Twin Cities rock, next time on Culture Q.
Come on, children, you're acting like children. Every generation thinks it's the end of the world. All you fat followers get fit fast. Every generation thinks it's the last.
Support for Culture Q comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.